right, it's time for more GoldSeek.com radio. Today's featured guest, Axel Merk of Merk Investments.
My featured guest today says the end of dollar hegemony is unfolding. Investors must prepare for an entirely new investment ontology. Axel Merk, President, Chief Investment Officer of Merk Investments, manager of the Merk Funds, innovator in gold and currency investing, and author of Sustainable Wealth. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you.
Since the end of World War II, the greenback emerged as the de facto global currency. You say, though, that borrowing costs could soar in the United States.
I'm not in the camp that the rest of the world is going to conspire and just say, hey, we'll dump our dollars. For that, you've got to really have a belief in authority that people are able to coordinate things. I'm much more a believer that the road is paved with good intentions, meaning everybody is out there for their own good and is trying to do what they think is in their interest. Now, you might wonder, why do they want to keep those reserves and so forth? But I'm specifically referring to, in my latest analysis, to some of the dynamics that have been playing out. And most notably, if you think about it, for example, if somebody is raising money in the U.S. as a plant manager in an emerging market, well, they might raise dollar debt, and then they will sell the dollars to buy the local currency. And so then the government that doesn't want the currency to appreciate has an incentive to counter that. Now, all that said, why is it that the plan manager wants to raise the money in the U.S. to begin with? And that's where this analysis is really at its core. I claim that this is due to some quirks that have been around in the money market fund industry. And most notably, if you use your money market fund, well, you think your money is safe, right? And so money market funds invest in short-term commercial paper and other short-term debt that isn't really, quote-unquote, completely safe. It's not backed by the government, but that has been the perception. And regulations until a few weeks ago have kind of encouraged that sort of vision. And with that, those that have issued debt have had an advantage, meaning lower borrowing cost when they were raising money. And now as these rules are changing, what I believe is happening is that, well, not just foreigners, but others as well, might think twice whether they should really raise all this money in USD. And in my view, that's going to have seismic changes as the world is adjusting to a world where that implicit subsidy is vanishing.
It's interesting because the world is adjusting now at a rapid clip. And you point out the yuan, of course, recently added to the official basket of reserve currencies, SDRs. Now, you say this is a clear sign that there is an end of dollar dominance, that folks may have their wires crossed here, that the prevailing view might not be correct. Could you tell us more?
There has been a lot being made about the Chinese moving to a reserve currency basket is really what's going to change the world. And timing-wise, they might actually be right because those changes in the money market fund rules happen to coincide with the Chinese adding the yuan as the SDR. To me, that's just a symptom of how the world is shifting. Again, everybody is in there for their own good. The IMF, of course, has been trying to be relevant for decades now, and now they elevated the Chinese yuan to be reserve currency. Remember, most countries, and none of the big countries, do not manage the reserves according to the SDR basket. Indeed, when that basket was recently changed, the dollar weighting barely changed. The yuan was increased at the expense of the yen and the sterling and the euro, mostly. Kind of a change from one day to the other. But it's a perception change, by all means. This happened to coincide with a change in money market fund rules, and I should be more specific. It's institutional money market funds that are not government funds. And the change where you see that isn't so much in the yuan trading. Where you see it is in the LIBOR rates. The LIBOR rates are the intrabank borrowing rates of banks that don't have access to the Fed. And so typically you refer to the kind of the borrowing cost in London between banks, and they have been rising in recent months or even in recent years as people have been getting ready. And so the stress that's in the system, as some people call it, is really just a repricing that that investors no longer have access to this free cash from money market funds. If I can take a step back here for a moment, in 2011, half of money market fund holdings, of prime money market fund holdings, were in U.S. dollar denominated commercial paper by European banks. Remember, we had this little Eurozone debt crisis? Half the holdings. There was one major brokerage firm that had, we looked it up, this was hiding in plain sight, 75% of its holding in commercial paper issued by European banks. And so, and those numbers have shifted since. There's higher quality in there. It's not just European banks, but it shows how important money market funds are to others, to European banks funding, and not just European banks, to corporate issuers, to sovereign debt issuers, all kinds of players. And because that free ride that they have been getting has been going away, the funding costs, they increase, LIBOR rates have been increasing, and that is the key, in my view, how the world is shifting. Now, what's happening in China is a very interesting sideshow, and clearly that what the Chinese are doing is hugely relevant in the long run. But for the time being, the kind of the threat of the dollar dominance, I don't think it is something that's decided by the policymakers, but it's been a quirk in the regulations that kind of artificially subsidized everybody who wanted to get dollar funding. And now, as that is phasing out or has been phased out, well, now why would you want to raise your funds in USD? You can raise them in euro. Think about it. Many corporations now issuing euro-denominated debt. Now, obviously, that's exacerbated by the fact that it's much cheaper to borrow in euros because the rates are negative or lower, at least, than they're in the U.S. And so that has been exacerbating that trend. And so something like the SDR, I think, is a wonderful sideshow, but the real thing is happening right in front of our eyes in the money markets.
The U.S. dollar, although many top pundits are saying that this is a new uptrend, of course, the dollar has been stronger for about 2 years now, and decidedly so. You even point out that it's approximately 2 standard deviations above the longer-term moving average, which, of course, is more than the norm. This all has implications, obviously, for the precious metals market.
Yeah, no kidding that being more than standard deviation, more than 2 standard deviations beyond the long-term moving average is not exactly the norm. So, yes, I do think the dollar is a bit overbought here. What exactly it means? Well, it's an excellent question. In the long run, I can tell you, in the long run, it means that more funding will take place in local currencies, which is ultimately healthier for the global financial system. Long term, the dollar is going to be less relevant. And long term, it means that all borrowers in the U.S., and I would think even the government borrowers, meaning the U.S. Treasury, is going to have to pay a higher cost. And because I don't think we can afford a much higher cost, the Federal Reserve is going to keep rates artificially low, which means you're not going to get compensating for U.S. dollars appropriately, and that is going to weaken the dollar in the medium to long term. Now, what it means in the short term is a far more difficult question. And the reason I say that is that there are so many different people using the dollar for so many different purposes. I mentioned the corporate hedger before. Well, from a sovereign, from an emerging country. Well, that sort of, if they borrow less in USD, the only impact you might see is that foreign governments might do less to kind of sterilize the inflows that come otherwise to these emerging markets. And we've seen that the reserve holdings of some of these emerging market governments have been decreasing. I don't think that's a coincidence. It's not just a quote-unquote flight to quality. There's less of a need to that. So we see some of that. That doesn't have a direct implication for the currency. But if you're not hedged, if you just borrowed in USD before, well, borrowing money in a currency is akin to shorting a currency. And so if they stop borrowing money in the USD, that's actually going to help the dollar upward. And so I think part of the kind of the rise in the USD we saw until the end of last year, and by the way, since then it's been on the decline, that may be that was the period where we had a quote-unquote dollar squeeze. But of course, there are others that use the dollar differently. And so in the short term, the amounts are enormous. I don't think anybody has a clear picture what it means. But in the medium to long term, it means the dollar is going to be used less for funding purposes. And that has other implications. Remember, we have this flight to quality. The dollar is supposed to benefit. Well, if you look at in recent times, the euro has tended to benefit much more when there's a flight to quality. The euro has become a funding currency. And by the way, the yen has been benefiting less so. That doesn't mean the dollar can't benefit anymore if there's a true crisis somewhere. But still, those dynamics are changing. They're changing in front of our eyes. And many people, if they don't pay attention, might just not notice it.
You discussed this idea that perhaps this is a dollar squeeze. We don't know for sure, but you raised the point. In the Merck Perspective Insights, you give one compelling bullet as to why that might be the case. Everyone's focused on dollar strength, but has anyone really taken the time to look at the competing currencies? Many of these currencies within, you know, the SDRs might be putting in a bottom. I mean, after all, we have record negative rates. We're seeing this in Europe and the Bank of Japan, as well as Sweden and a few other peripheral nations.
Well, the first topic on the dollar squeeze, and there I have my own view. In fact, we have battles inside our office of whether I'm right or wrong. I happen to believe that dollar squeeze might be done and was overdone with at the end of last year. Now, others are arguing this could take much, much longer, and I'm not going to try to settle that discussion here right now. But the other point here, and you alluded to it earlier, if you look at the long-term dollar average, and with long-term, I'm talking about a three-year moving average, we are really two standard deviations above the long-term average, which means, if nothing else, the dollar isn't cheap right now. And the reason why the dollar isn't cheap is because we got this expectation we're going to have these rate hikes going up. Well, many people think when U.S. rates go up, the dollar goes up. Well, if you look at history, there is just no proof on that. Historically, the dollar has increased in anticipation of the first rate hike. When the U.S. actually starts hiking rates, the historic picture is far more mixed. And indeed, this is exactly what has happened this time around as well. The dollar was rallying into the first rate hike we had a year ago, at the end of last year. And then, since then, it's been a much more mixed picture versus the major currencies has actually gone down. And so part of that is, of course, because A, we have priced in a lot of hikes. And if you've noticed, hey, if we do one 0.25% rate hike every 12 months, that doesn't mean we are exactly, quote unquote, tightening. In fact, I would allege that inflation is creeping up more by 25 basis points a year. And so on a real basis, rates actually are going down. And so that brings me to the point that you're raising here. I actually think we are closer to the top of the rate cycle in the U.S. And now, if you look at the rest of the world, take Europe. Many of these policies haven't worked. You throw more negative interest rates at the market. That stuff just doesn't work. But that also means they're not effective at easing. And indeed, Mr. Draghi, the head of the European Central Bank, has said that the fragmentation in the Eurozone is done and over with. Mission is accomplished. Now, you can argue that that's not right, but that's a sign that they may not push down the accelerator further, that indeed they might be closer to the bottom of the easing cycle. So if you put those together, that we are closer to top in the U.S. and closer to the bottom in the Eurozone, and that, quote-unquote, everybody thinks the dollar is going to go up, well, I'd love to take a contrarian point of view on that and saying, well, maybe, just maybe, we're going to see the dollar weaken from here on forward.
Move on here. You point out almost a perfect world for the precious metals, at least in terms of U.S. investors. Inflation is strong and real interest rates are essentially contained by inflation. Is that not a positive for the metals? And do you see stronger or better times ahead?
Well, sure. First of all, I'm regulating anything that I say, so I am not allowed to say we have a perfect world for something. To me, the two key reasons why one wants to invest in precious metals and gold specifically. One is just for diversification, and I think that's a battle that most people agree to. The correlation of gold to equities, for example, in the long run is just about zero. It doesn't mean it's not correlated on any specific day, but from a correlation point of view, gold is clearly a diversifier. Now, the question always is, how is gold going to perform going forward? Is there a positive return expectations? How can this brick that doesn't do anything have a positive return expectation? And historically, it has had it, but how about going forward? And to me, the prime competitor to gold is cash. If cash pays you a real interest rate, meaning that after inflation pays you a return, then cash is a competitor. And that is why in the early 80s, when Paul Volcker hiked interest rates to the stratosphere to around 20%, the price of gold came down quite substantially. So if you think we have a Paul Volcker Fed that is going to have very high real interest rates, I would stay away from gold. Now, I happen to think that real interest rates continue to hover near zero, and obviously it depends a little bit on what inflation gauge one is using. But I just don't see also how in the long term we can afford positive real interest rates. I can't see it in the U.S. I can't see it in the Eurozone. I can't see it in Japan. I can't see it in England, by the way, either in the U.K. And so those are the sort of reasons why I happen to think that gold might do just as well going forward as it has done historically. Doesn't mean it's always going to go up. But since 1971 or so, the return of gold has been on an annual basis about 8%. Now, I don't know whether gold is going to return 8% going forward, but I happen to think the odds of gold performing well going forward are about or at least as good as they have been in the past. And the past returns have been quite attractive on a risk-adjusted basis. And so that's really kind of, without getting too emotional about it, why gold, in my view, has a role to play in people's portfolios, and why the fact that it doesn't return anything doesn't really, as far as kind of you don't, it doesn't produce anything, doesn't bother me, because cash really doesn't return anything either if you don't put it at risk. And it does, of course, raise the question, maybe the quote-unquote bad thing here is the cash rather than the gold.
We see the Fed funds futures really discounting any rate hikes in 2017, and therefore maybe nothing higher than 75 basis points in this December, at the December upcoming FOMC meeting at most. So again, investors clearly agree with your sentiments there and your thesis. And lastly here, cryptocurrencies. You know, in your hometown there, at least the office area, that region, you have another business professional, the venture capitalist Mr. Draper. He's made some rather startling forecasts and projections for Bitcoin. Mr. Draper believes that we could see six digits on this currency in the coming years, and that it even perhaps directly competes with the yellow metal and other currencies around the world, and has some very interesting and unique qualities as well as some weaknesses. Any thoughts?
Bitcoin to me is a very intriguing technology. And what I love about Bitcoin is the decentralized ledger. Now, for that very reason, authorities don't like it. What authorities are very concerned about is that people can trade something and there's no trace, that they don't know how to deal with anti-money laundering issues. And by the way, that's the same thing, of course, with gold. You can trade a gold coin or gold bar and there's no trace of it. But because it's an electronic world, authorities want to do it. Now, back to kind of how relevant that is, in my view, something like the Bitcoin technology will have amazing applications. I can see it being used for trading airline miles. I can see it being used for all kinds of things. What I haven't wrapped my head around it is why somebody would want to hold what is ultimately a delayed debit card that's fluctuating wild in value. So the Bitcoin incarnation as is, to me, isn't a quote-unquote currency. It is a wonderful vehicle if you're in China and want to get money out of the country. It's a wonderful vehicle if you want to send money long distance, if you're willing to take the risk that it's fluctuating current, that the value is fluctuating, although nowadays there are some Bitcoin derivatives that take that sort of risk out of the equation. So to me, Bitcoin is a stepping stone in a good direction. It's vastly different from gold, although it does have some very intriguing features. I think the technology is going to stay with us. I think in a few years from now, I think we will talk about something other than Bitcoin, but that other thing will have elements of that same technology. So it's a fascinating topic. As far as the quote-unquote appropriate value for Bitcoin, I have no idea.
There's roughly 21 million Bitcoins in total, which were embedded into the blockchain that is, of course, in public domain. And therefore, there is no central bank. There's no ability, I guess, for policymakers to manipulate, at least not at this time. They might try to regulate it at some point.
Anything that's successful is going to get regulated. And so that's why we don't know in which direction this is going to go. And the advantage gold has a couple millennia in history of how people have regulated it, with some of good and the bad. And so we kind of know what to expect and what to be afraid of. With Bitcoin, there are many unknowns there. It doesn't mean there's no value there. But it does mean that there's a lot more that we as investors and that engineers and technology folks and that hackers, by the way, as well, will need to learn in how to work with Bitcoin.
You know, Satoshi, the nom de plume or the pseudonym for the individual who at least hypothetically engineered Bitcoin, is on record that I don't know where Bitcoin will be. So he shares your sentiment that we just can't quite see the future when it comes to this, but it's intriguing nevertheless. Any parting comments or any other topicality that we've missed today you'd like to share with the listening audience?
I think we've covered a great deal. What I can encourage any listeners to do is follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Axel Merck, AXELMERK, or sign up to our free newsletter at merckinvestments.com. Learn about what we do. We address these sort of topics all the time. We work a lot with gold and then obviously, as you've pointed out, try to make sense of the world of currencies.
Mr. Merck, always informative. Look forward to further commentary in 2017.
All right. My pleasure.
The
gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.